Marxist communism, you can find out a lot about Marxist communism just by reading the Communist Manifesto, which was published in 1848 by Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels. I talked to a Christian lady once, and she said that she likes communism because she said, I sum up communism in one word, sharing. And so I told her, I said, well, that's nice, but Karl Marx summed up communism in one phrase, the abolition of private ownership. And see, there's a big difference between sharing what you have, that's compassionate capitalism, because you actually own something to share with others. There's a big difference between that and the government coming in, taking everything that you own, and then redistributing it as it sees fit. So, I mean, I went to Israel, got to speak at a school out there and a church out there and some Bible studies. And what I found is that most of the apartments are owned by the government, and then you buy it off of them. So that if there's you might have to pay $200,000 for a nice apartment. And so you're getting the loan from the government and paying the government. That's an example of socialism and all. We'll talk about that a little bit. By the way, socialism and communism are not, we have been lied to, are not on opposite ends of the spectrum. It's not one's good, the other's evil. They're two different shades of the same color. The USSR, one of the S's stand for socialist. Communism means the classless utopian society that no one's ever going to see. Socialism is the stage that's supposed to get us there. So socialism, big government control over just about everything that we have, so communists are socialists who promise to someday want communism to come about. But so for all practical purposes, communism and socialism are interchangeable words. Fascism is very close to socialism. Well, I don't even know if I should talk about this, but okay, here's the lie that we're given on the left and the right. The extreme right, okay, means anarchy. There's absolutely no government at all. Okay? The extreme left is all-powerful government, total government control, okay? So it's communism, because right now they're settling for the socialistic state, so socialism, communism, okay? And so, well, I shouldn't put it right in the middle, but it's not far from the middle. It's a constitutional republic. The United States, very limited government. You get a little further right from that, and it's libertarianism, where you can almost kill a guy on your property because the government's got no right to tell you what to do on your property. Okay, so what they call the Republican Party today is so socialistic. Democrats are like here. Republicans are like right next to them. So see, with each year, the right keeps moving further and further left. So you're a right-wing extremist if you're over here, when in reality, you should be way further right than so-called right-wing extremists. Now, what certain constitutional organizations will do, will turn this into a horseshoe and put anarchy down here and socialism or communism over here, because when you get total anarchy, no government at all, it creates chaos, and the most power-hungry individuals take over, and so they leap all the way to the far left, to the socialistic state, so that anarchy ends up becoming very close to all-powerful government. And it's really crazy, because democracy sometimes is used as a code word for anarchy, but more times than not today, it's used as a code word of a form of socialism where you get to elect your slave masters, okay? So that Mikhail Gorbachev uses democracy and socialism interchangeably. When President Bush says he wants to make the world safe for democracy, the founding fathers would cringe because the founding fathers considered democracy a bad word. We're a constitutional republic. It's not a total democracy. If mankind knew what was best for himself, we wouldn't need government. So but the people get the right to elect leaders, but even the leaders are subject to the law. The law is above them, and the law is based on God's word, as was our Constitution. Karl Marx was an atheist who viewed everything in terms of economics. There was the bourgeoisie, the capitalists, the business owners. They're the bad guys, and there's the good guys, the proletariat, the working class. So keep that in mind as we march on through this material. Marx's philosophy, first he started out with the Hegelian dialectic. Now let me say this, the Hegelian dialectic, all it means is that he viewed everything, he was an idealist, everything that is ultimately real are ideas, okay? You'll have one idea will reign during a certain period of time, and then there'll be another idea will oppose it, and other ideas, and there could be a whole group of ideas. But human history is the unfolding of ideas. So Hegel believed that reality is becoming, not being. Everything is relative. Nothing is absolute. He viewed history as the unfolding of the historical process of different ideas. The exchange of ideas being synthesized, okay? Now, an overly simplistic view of Hegel, which Hegel himself rejected, some real obscure German philosopher held to it, Marx bought on it, and now everybody thinks Hegel taught this, but a simplistic view of Hegel's dialectic, there's a thesis, there'll be an idea, a powerful idea that reigns supreme in a particular time in history, then there will be the antithesis, the opposing idea, and then there'll be debates and all, and the two of them eventually will be synthesized to form a new truth, the synthesis, okay? By the way, there is a certain amount of truth to this. It's just not that simple, that triad, thesis, antithesis, synthesis, that's just too simplistic. But you do see that type of thing going on. For instance, you have Christianity battling atheism, and the synthesis of it is liberal Christianity, where Bishop Spong and the Jesus Seminar have more in common with the atheists or the New Agers than they do with Christians, but they still call themselves Christians. And they use the Bible that the atheists hate and the Christians love, and they twist verses out of context to promote more of an atheistic viewpoint. So he saw this Hegelian dialectic, the thesis, the antithesis, and the synthesis. And so there is no absolute truth right now. Everything is evolving into absolute truth, okay? Now, what Marx did was he took the Hegelian dialectic, and Hegel was a rationalist and an idealist. Only ideas exist, so he was not a materialist. Well, Marx took from Hegel his dialectic, but combined it with Ludwig Feuerbach's materialism, his atheistic materialism. There is no God. Man created God through his own imagination, and all that exists is material. So Marx said that, you know, human rights are government-given. They're not God-given. They don't come from God. And so now Marx has got this Hegelian dialectic, but only matter exists. So he's moving away from Hegel in one area, and he's trying to hold to a watered-down view of Hegel in another area. But then Marx, money, economic issues prevailed. They were the utmost importance. Economic determinism. He believed in that human history is nothing but class struggle and revolution, the economic unfolding of history. So he could see primitive communism, the thesis, and then slavery, the antithesis, and what synthesized from that was feudalism, and then eventually capitalism was synthesized out of that. and that eventually the whole world, what would be economic determinism, would move us in the direction where socialism, you'd have a one-world socialistic government, which he called the dictatorship of the proletariat. So the working class becomes the dictator, and he never explained how that was to be done. So in Russia, they said, well, how can the working class be the dictator when there's so many of them? They must need representatives. What better representatives than us, the professional revolutionaries, the guys who slaughtered all the people to get to power, the power that we are? So now you have these cold-blooded revolutionaries. It becomes a dictatorship of cold-blooded revolutionaries. I don't know, you know, a lot of people say, well, that's why the Soviet Union really wasn't Marxist in their thought. It's like, well, their guess is as good as anybody else's what a dictatorship of the proletariat is going to mean. I mean, what do? You just maybe just elect some workers to lead? And the war heroes, the bloody guys who won the revolution for you, they're just going to sit down and go away? He wanted workers of the world to unite. You have nothing to lose but your chains, he said. And he wanted the proletariat, the working class, to topple their governments, to topple their regimes, to punish the business owners, and to do away with profit. Profit is evil. To do away with private property and form these socialistic regimes with the dictatorship of the proletariat. And then once all nations on earth were like that, then we could start moving towards the classless society, utopia.
Amen.
You know, so, and that's two things with that. Number one, dictators, you know, in New Jersey, they would always build tolls to pay for highways. And they say, once the highways are paid for, we're going to take down the toll booths. They don't do that. And then when they say, you know what, we're stopping traffic too much, we have 5 toll booths in this area, let's just make 2 toll booths and get rid of the middle 3. And then the people rejoice in New Jersey. Yeah, but they raise the price on the other 2 toll booths, so you're still paying as much as or more than what you were paying earlier. Okay? See, in other words, what I'm saying is, when you give power, more power and more control to government leaders, they never give it back. This is one of the things that concerns me about this unending, vague war on terrorism. We never know when it's done. So right now, Americans are willingly, voluntarily sacrificing constitutional rights for a war that has no clearly defined ending. The fact of the matter is, World War II had a clearly defined ending, and we regained some of our rights, but government grew and didn't get that much smaller after World War II. It just continued to grow right on through. Founding fathers knew that the hardest time for our people to remain free is during a time of war. That's why they viewed war as only a last resort. They were not isolationist. They were non-interventionist. They believe you don't intervene in the affairs of other nations unless American lives and property are at stake. But during times of war, because the government gains more control, when government officials get more power, they don't give that up. And now Karl Marx is trying to convince us that once the whole world sets up socialistic states, dictatorship of the proletariat, that they're going to say, okay, now's the time to move to a classless society. Let's give up our power and our mansions and all our money and all the guns that we have and enter into this classless society. It's not going to happen. Karl Marx totally misunderstood human nature. Yeah. You know, sometimes I even wonder if he really had a goal of bringing about the class of society. He might have been an ivory tower, naive thinker. Then again, maybe he was just after the power, knowing that they're never going to hand it off. But whatever the case, that's one case scenario. The power-hungry individuals don't give up their power. Secondly, if they did, it'd probably be just as bad. Because a classless society is a society basically without order, without government, and you end up with anarchy. And whenever you have anarchy, the people who desire the most power by force are going to take control. And so you go right back to an all-powerful government and a dictatorship again. Marx also believed in Darwinian evolution, survival of the fittest, so, you know, revolution's a thing that's, by the way, he believed everything was evolving, including government and economic systems. So he believed everything would evolve in the direction he wanted it to go, but he did believe that man at least has enough freedom to speed up the process through revolution. And so that's why he was calling for the workers to revolt. And survival of the fittest fits in real well with revolution. He believed religion to be the opium of the people. The religion, you start thinking about the hereafter, and then you don't mind mistreatment from your boss. Okay? I mean, let me tell you, we have a lot of enemies out there. Some of them are people in powerful places in our own government, but we have a lot of enemies out there. But I do not put high on the list whoever it is who's signing my paycheck. Okay? Your boss is not the... Now, if your boss treats you like trash, you need to find a new job. But the fact of the matter is, the guy who's, you know, if I didn't have the courage and the wisdom to start my own business and to make lots of money, then a guy who does have that and gives me a job, if he signed my paycheck and all, and I agreed to the terms there, he is not the enemy. And we hear over and over again communist-type thinking, where they were saying, like, Terrell Owens, one of the talk show hosts, was saying that the business owners are like his slave masters. What slave freely signs a contract to play a game for millions upon millions of dollars, and then because he wants more money than that, he wants to violate his contract, it's because these white owners of his football team are like slave masters. It's like slave masters don't pay millions of dollars to their slaves. That's not slavery. I live much more like a slave than a wealthy football player does, and I'm not even close to being a slave in those regards. If anything, I think there's one area where we're moving towards slavery is taxation. Because you can give people all the freedom in the world on paper, but if you're taking half of the money they make away, they only have half the freedom to do the things that, you know, they're buying half. Only they only have power to use half of their buying power. So we got to start thinking of taxation in terms of control. Sure, the government needs to tax us to a certain degree, but when it gets 50, 60, 70%, like Europe, and most places in Europe is like 70%, you can call it freedom. That's not freedom. You can have freedom of religion, but what good is it how can you tithe when the government's already taking 70% of what you make in some European countries? If you're going to tithe off the top, now you're down to 20%. How you gonna take care of your family on that? What good is the right to bear arms if you can't afford to buy a firearms and ammunition? What good is having freedom if you have to work two jobs and you don't have any free time to speak out against government abuses? Karl Marx said that private property must be abolished. So whoever says communism is sharing is trying to sell you a bill of goods. Karl Marx, one of his planks of the Communist Manifesto, is not only private property must be abolished, but the family must be abolished. He believed the state must raise and educate the children in government-run schools. Okay? See, the Founding Fathers, what do you think the Founding Fathers would say about teaching religion in the public schools? Would they say we have to get religion out of the public schools?
No, I think they would have condoned it and said...
The Founding Fathers would say that, take religion out of public schools. They'd say, what are you talking about? The religious people, they're the ones who start the schools. See, the Founding Fathers, their concept of a public school would be a religious school founded by religious people, i.e. Christian, who believe people should be able to read and write and do math and better themselves and be all that God called them to be and be able to read the Bible. But religious people start schools. What the Founding Fathers would not be able to comprehend is why in the world Americans were so dumb to allow the federal government to control education. In other words, the Founding Fathers would be for, there's an organization in California, the Separation of School and State. They believe the state needs to get out of the public schools. But basically all schools should, for all private purposes, what we call private schools today, those should be the only kinds of schools. You get people in a community and they say, you know, we want our kids to be educated. Let's get together and start a school. We'll hire a teacher. We'll build a one-room schoolhouse. Okay? Well, they're Christians. So what do? They hire a Christian teacher. The Bible's part of the curriculum and all. Now, if atheists want to start a school, atheists usually, only recently do they start schools. Normally, atheists would just hijack Christian schools. But if atheists want to start a school, fine, and they want to educate children in atheism, fine, but nobody's forced to go there and stuff. And if you're a Buddhist and you grow up in a Christian community and it's a Christian school and you don't like it, you might have to, drive your kid a couple hours a day to a nice Buddhist community and go to a Buddhist school. Or just send them there and have them board there and all. But the Founding Fathers, it was the parents were in charge of their children and all. And most states have felt the same way the federal government was. The United States Constitution gave the federal government no power over education. You know, the Communist Manifesto, the government controls education. Plato's Republic, the government controls education. But the Founding Fathers believed, no, the families are going to decide, the parents are going to decide where their kids go to school and how the kids get educated. And the parents are often going to do that within the context of their religion. So the Founding Fathers have no problem with God and the Bible being taught in the schools. They have a problem with the government sticking its nose in the schools. What does the Tenth Amendment say? In the Bill of Rights, the Tenth Amendment, any power not given to the federal government here in this little tiny document called the Constitution automatically falls back to the states and the people, respectively. Now, most of these guys, then after signing that, they went back to their states and they formed constitutions a lot like the federal government, which basically pushed off education on the local level. See, freedom, political freedom, is going to shock you. Political freedom means self-government. It means the freedom to govern yourself. Now, granted, we do need a federal government. We do need state governments, we do need local governments, but in each step we're giving up a little bit of our ability to govern ourselves. So freedom is not receiving handouts from the federal government. Freedom means you govern most of the affairs of your life and there's as little government intrusion as there needs to be to keep order in society. So the Founding Fathers, there are only two ways to keep order in a society. This is why America's society is so violent. We're in between the two ways, okay? One way is that you protect a human being's God-given right to protect themselves. You protect the right to bear arms. So nobody wants to break into your house because most Americans own firearms. If I break into that guy's house, I'm probably going to get shot, so I'm not going to do it. So that's one way to keep order, is limited government with a spiritually mature populace. That's why John Adams said that our government was made solely for a religious people. When we cease to be religious, we're going to cease to be free. So we govern ourselves. We're responsible enough to protect our own families so nobody wants to break into our houses. The other way to keep order is nobody's allowed to own weapons, but you roll a tank down the street every 5 minutes. A police state, okay? So now the guy doesn't want to break in your house because the KGB is going to shoot him, okay? Or the military is going to shoot him. The problem with America is we no longer allow our people to govern ourselves, and in many cases, we're not even mature enough to govern ourselves, yet we haven't fully gone to the police state yet. We're moving in that direction. But in the meantime, we've got freedom with nobody mature enough to protect themselves or nobody allowed to protect themselves. So the thugs know most houses I break into, nobody owns weapons. okay? And when I break into that house, I've got my own illegally owned weapon. I can take care of myself. But whatever the case, Karl Marx wanted the family abolished, wanted the state to run the schools. See, the Founding Fathers knew if the government controls the schools, you don't get education, you get indoctrination and political correctness. Okay? Everything focuses on keeping the people in power, in power. When the churches run the schools, then, and with the parents' consent, then it's going to be what's best for the parents and for the kids. See, the Founding Fathers did not trust human nature. And my God, government, the road to tyranny, there is no... The only reason for human government is creation. The only two reasons, creation and the fall. Because mankind, it was created in God's image, human life is worth protecting. If we're mere molecules in motion, we're not worth protecting. But if mankind had not fallen, we wouldn't need protecting. But because mankind has fallen, we need protecting. So that means we need human government, because the doctrines of the creation and the fall, which is exactly what the atheists deny. But then humans are going to lead human governments, and they're going to be fallen humans, so you need to find ways to limit their powers, separation of powers, state government, local government, different branches of the federal government. Founding Fathers created our systems for the purpose of red tape, so that if our leaders wanted to enslave us, they'd be too busy fighting each other to get it done. We act like when the government, federal government's shutting down, we act like it's the end of the world, like we won't be able to live till tomorrow. We become so dependent upon them. But Karl Marx wanted bigger government. One of the ways to bring it about was through graduated income tax. We didn't start taxing the income until the early 1900s. I believe going into World War II, most Americans, like less than 2 or 3% of their income was even being taxed. And now we're at the point where you take federal, state, local tax, sales tax. About one out of every two of our dollars is going to the government in some way, shape, or form. We want to graduated income tax, which even before revolution, you'd have your government already moving towards socialism. He wanted the government to control the means of production, and to eventually bring about, through revolution, you'd get the dictatorship of the working class, dictatorship of the proletariat. So he's calling for dictatorship and eventually a one-world government. And then these dictators would all give up their power and you'd have the one-world classless society. Yeah, it's just a pipe dream. It just shows how rejection of God leads to tyranny. And that's what my book, God, Government, and the Road to Tyranny, is all about, a Christian view of government and morality. You reject God, it leads to tyranny, period. And he's got a pipe dream about bringing about this perfect society. Number one, what he calls a perfect society is not a perfect society. It's anarchy. And number two, you wouldn't even get to that stage. The dictators aren't going to give up their power. Now, there was an Italian named Gramsci who liked Karl Marx. He wanted Marx's goals to be achieved, but he knew that, being an Italian, he knew that the Roman Catholic Church and its hold on Europe was too strong, that you couldn't fight religion and get the people to revolt. They would obey their priest. So he wanted Marx's goals to be achieved differently. And so Gramsci said, religion is too powerful to overthrow, so instead we should evolve into communism rather than call for revolutions. He said that rather than fighting religion, let's infiltrate and use religion. That's what created the liberation theology of Desmond Tutu in South Africa. Bishop Desmond Tutu, who is not a believer, denies the virgin birth, the deity of Christ, the bodily resurrection of Christ. But he used the liberation theology was also used in Nicaragua by the Sandinistas. And basically they turned Jesus, instead of fighting Christianity, they claimed that, they became priests he's communist, and they turned Jesus into the greatest Marxist revolutionary who ever lived. So that Jesus came to liberate the poor, and he wanted to do it through communism. Is America being taken over by Marxist communists? No. No. We have very few Marxist communists in power. However, both in the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, they are infected with Gramscian communist thinking. Let me give you a typical debate. I know evangelicals get upset with me on this issue. You know, and I'm an evangelical, so I don't like my brothers and sisters getting upset with me, but are Republicans really trying to bring us back to the Constitution? I mean, you get some guys like Ron Paul, very, very much a constitutionalist, who's a Republican, but you know, I remember one big debate in the 90s, and this is typical. The Democratic Party wanted to raise the federal school lunch program by 7% over the next year. The Republican Party wanted to cut that increase to 3%. Both sides wanted to increase the size of federal government in providing lunches for school children. Both sides were moving in the direction of communism. On that particular issue, the Democrats wanted to move towards a communist state, a socialist state, faster than the Republicans. Neither one of them wanted to cut the size of government. I mean, there's a point where what we call diplomacy isn't diplomacy any longer. It's compromise. And that's what's going on. I worked my heart out for the Republican Party in the 1980s and the 1990s, and eventually I found out the rhetoric was good, but both sides are infected by an anti-Christian government solves all problems. And I'll tell you, it's worship of government is what it's becoming. When something goes wrong, even we Christians, something goes wrong, prayer is the last thing that comes to mind. We can't handle it. Right at the top of the list is there some government program that could take care of me. And, you know, it's getting so bad. I mean, it's getting so bad that, you know, even we Christians may have to rely on the government. I mean, that might be the only way to feed your family. But let's not act like that's the way that it ought to be. Let's acknowledge that, you know, in the 20th century, two of the biggest things in regards to government that came out of the 20th century, number one, 20th century proved the dangers, proved how lethal big government is. Dr. Rummel's research showed that big governments murdered more of their own people during peacetime than all the people who have died during the history of mankind's wars put together. That's in the 20th century alone. So I mean, you get Soviet Union, 1917 to about 1990, about 70 years. You get Red China from 1948 to the end of 2000, you know, and they're continuing, but we're just talking about the 20th century. Just those two alone killed somewhere in the area about 120 million of their own people during peacetime. Do you realize that the life expectancy goes up in some communist regimes during a time of war? Because during peacetime, they disarm their public, and then they start killing all their political enemies. During a time of war, at least the guy's got a rifle to defend himself. Big government kills. Big government is the number one serial murderer in the history of mankind. And we're not even counting government-sponsored and often government-financed abortions. Yeah. But mostly in atheistic, communistic regimes and in Islamic regimes where you see the slaughter of innocent people taking place. Yet the atheist will always tell the crew, look at how many witches were killed by the Roman Catholic Church and then by the Protestant Church in America. And they throw out a few thousand here and there by people who call themselves Christians who probably weren't. But still a few thousand against hundreds of millions. Somewhere between the total numbers is somewhere between 120 and 370 million people slaughtered by big governments during the 20th century alone. And the reason why you can say, well, how could the numbers be that far apart, 120 million, 370 million? It's really hard to get good statistics from governments who slaughter their own people. Unless the guy's willing and dealing to try to get time off in prison, it's pretty tough to get a serial murderer to tell you, to admit to all the people he killed. So we have more evidence than any other time in history that big government kills. Tyranny kills. Yet we also come into the 21st century with possibly the highest level of worship for government. What I mean by worship for government, when anything goes wrong, if you need anything, don't look to God, don't look to family, don't look to friends, look to government. And the more and more prevalent that becomes, the closer and closer it comes to worship. So we are at the point where we blindly trust our government officials and think government is going to solve all our problems, even on an international scale, maybe through the United Nations. Yet we have more evidence that a big federal government or big global government is much more of a threat to our freedoms and to our lives than the other problems we face.
No, we're just trying to sort that out. You're not talking about a dictatorship like maybe Hussein back, 23 years ago, and how he ruled over his people.
That would be part of Dr. Rummel would include, yeah.
Okay.
Any kind of dictators. So the Saddam Husseins would be involved in his studies. I think his studies cut off around 1993. I think he's still alive, so he's probably continuing them. Here's something to throw out. Islamic fundamentalism is the main target, whether we like it or not. If we're going to be honest, Islamic fundamentalism, a radical adherence to the Quran, a strict adherence to the Quran, is the cause of this terrorist violence that we're fighting, okay? Keep in mind, Saddam Hussein's regime was probably the most secular regime in all the Middle East, other than Israel. If we act like our friends, Saudi Arabia and Pakistan or whatever, I mean, those guys, their governments are more infected with Islamic fundamentalism than even Saddam Hussein's was. So keep in mind, even though Saddam Hussein would back terrorism outside his borders, would slaughter his own people within his borders, if we're trying to get at the core of the problem, it's not him. If you want to take out every regime in the Middle East that has either direct or indirect ties to Al-Qaeda, Saddam Hussein would have been near the bottom of that list, which leads me to believe there's a whole different agenda there. But some of our closest allies, Al-Qaeda, would just shrivel up and die without their support. I'm not really sure. I want to damn my grandson, great-grandsons, great-great-grandsons, great-great-great-grandsons to this never-ending war on terrorism. I think we'd be much better off taking the troops and guarding our borders and making America a safe place to live. Yeah, we needed to rock and roll in Afghanistan. Taliban did it to us. But beyond that, if you're going to start going to indirect ties, you want to make the world safe for democracy? If by that you mean make the world safe for freedom, I thought that was Jesus' job, not the United States military. The ancient Roman Empire, Pax Romanus, Peace of Rome, they toppled regimes all over the world, set up their puppet rulers, and then taxed the people. They said, the least you could do is tax the people and worship Caesar as Lord, because we gave you peace. With peace like that, who needs wars? I don't think the more countries we invade, I don't think they're going to be grateful, and America's image is going to go up. But I think our founding fathers were right. We ought to protect our borders. Somebody comes over here and manages to get through us and kill our people, and it's a government-run thing. We'll go over and topple that government in a heartbeat. Our government officials on both sides of the aisle have our best interest at stake. Then why don't we secure our borders? Instead, we're spending billions of dollars securing the Iraq borders, and we're just leaving our borders open. And, we're catching more and more Al-Qaeda people in America, but the fact of the matter is, they shouldn't be in America. We shouldn't have to catch them in America. There's big government thinking of the Gramscian sort has infected American thought. That's why most of our conservatives now refer to themselves as neoconservatives, a newer type of conservative. And what that means is they're not really constitutionalists. They believe the best way to fight bad, and all you have to do is read their writings, they come right out and admit this, the best way to fight bad big government is through good big government. Constitutionalists, like our founding fathers, they would say all big government is bad government.